May Tynwald was a bit of a slow burn. A relatively light Tynwald, the Chief Minister giving a masterclass in spending a long time saying very little, and a spat between the New Policy Alliance and LegCo which generated a little heat in a rather quiet sitting. We'll return to May Tynwald shortly, but first, MHK for Glenfaber and Peel. Kate Lord Brennan is a little puzzled by Peel Town Commissioner's contradictory statements.
And on this occasion, of course, Minister for the Cabinet Office, and Cabinet Office is dealing with the Western and Northern plan, but you're obviously conflicted. You've got a constituency interest, and as well as no doubt manifesto commitments. So why are you picking a bit of a fight with Peel Town Commissioners?
Well, just to clear up that point about my ministerial role and my constituency role, my interest as a minister so far in the North West Area Plan process has been to oversee how that statutory process under the Town and Country Planning Act is being carried out. It involves a number of steps, and I work closely with Diane Kelsey, MLC, who has a delegation for planning policy, and it's actually quite far down the line until the matter for any proposals that may come to any solid basis come to any political vote. So I am definitely able to manage down the line the fact that I will have a constituency interest in this, and of course I do have a pre-declared position in terms of the development of brownfield sites over greenfield sites. So I'm able to manage all of that. But to get to the point of interest and the curious point of the submissions into the Northwest Area Plan process, which is a formal primary legislation process from Peel Town Commissioners, the point of concern for me and the reason why I have written to Peel Town Commissioners to get some clarity on what their true position is that there has been, quite a lot of sort of deflection and confusing positions put out more recently by the authority, also by the clerk, where they've sort of taken a strong position against the proposals that are due to go to public inquiry. That's an independently chaired process in relation to additional sites potentially for housing development on the outskirts of Peel. Now, the issue with this is that despite the commissioners taking this view, saying, look, this is ridiculous, why have additional sites been added? We don't want any more housing in Peel, and that sort of tack. It is in fact the case, and I do think that the public need to know, certainly my constituents need to be aware, especially with the public inquiry coming up, that the formal submissions on behalf of the commissioners have advocated strongly for more development on the outskirts of Peel.
That's quite shocking then. So on the one hand, the commissioners are saying they're against, but on the other hand, you're saying that their submission says they're in favour. That can't be right.
Well, it doesn't feel right. Definitely doesn't feel, consistent, if I can put it in those terms. So my request really, and my interest is really to sort of draw all this out so it is clear and public, and I published my letter to that effect to make things clear for the public. My interest really is that I think that the commissioners either need to clarify what their true position is. They need to be open about it in the run-up to and for the public inquiry, because actually it's a very serious thing to put in a considered submission, and this particular submission that was done in 2022 after the draft area plan was published, which did not, by government, include a swathe of additional sites for housing development on the outskirts of Peel. The representation put forward in the name of the commissioners strongly advocated that this should be the case, and this is in addition to a previous submission in 2022.
So in effect, what you're saying there about 2022 submission, the commissioners' election was in 2021. So the current commissioners, if that submission in 2022 was put in their name, either they've changed their mind in 2 years, or something mysterious has happened.
Well, it does seem odd. So my first interest was that there should be clarity of public understanding over this, because this sort of stuff is persuasive. In this case, it's definitely been persuasive in contributing to the changes in the draft area plan that could potentially see more land designated for housing on the outskirts of Peel. Of course, we know that there's been a lot of development over the past few years that was recognised in the original plan. I think that there is, you know, there does seem to be a point about governance here and exercise of powers, because in trying to drill down as to why there was such an inconsistent position, and there was essentially, you know, sort of the blame put on government, on cabinet office, on me for the sheer idea of these proposals. So when I drilled back to it, you can see that in the minutes, on the Peel Commissioner's own minutes from September 2022, you know, do refer to this submission being submitted to Cabinet Office. The minutes also seem to reveal that it may have been the view of the clerk and the planning consultant and not the view of the commissioners. Now, if that is the case, then that something else should have happened after that, right? Because that submission has been taken in good faith. And I think that the authority of the elected commissioners needs to be taken seriously. So it's this simple, Phil. Either the submission that was made formally is something that the commissioners stand by or not. And either the submission was made with the appropriate authority of the commissioners or not. It's actually pretty serious, because this stuff is influential. I'm keen that everything related to the area plan and proposals are tested at the public inquiry. I will represent there as a constituency MHK. I have the interests of Peel in my heart, and this is why I've published this letter. But we do need to have some clarification as to what the situation is, and I think if there are issues to be addressed within the local authority, then that needs to happen. So the full context is in my letter. It's really important that people know, and it's pretty serious.
We really must find a better place to do these interviews, because there's not much glazing on the Tynwald building. I think it's just single glazed, and every time a motorbike goes past, it disturbs the interview. But effectively, then, what you're saying is, in 2022, the Cabinet Office had produced an initial sort of draft document. The commissioners issued a response to that draft document, in which they said, in their response, that they wished to see more housing on the outskirts of Peel. And then latterly, the commissioners have issued a press release saying, when the revised document, the revised planning document, area plan, has been produced with the extra houses that commissioners asked for, the commissioners are now complaining about the extra houses.
It is inconsistencies of that nature. You know, the submission, you know, a planning consultant, a professional planning consultant was, you know, I presume hired to or arranged to prepare this submission. In that submission, they do argue strongly, saying actually we think you should revisit this to include more housing for development, specifically in the northeast outskirts of the town. It's pretty specific. This information is all now published and referred to, and I think that has been in various, you know, I haven't seen, you know, directly any news release, but you can find it out there. It's certainly been covered in the press, certainly covered by, you know, one or two commissioners who've come out there sort of robustly standing against this, the changes in the plan, you know. But I can say that certainly these changes have been brought about by representations in the name of the Peel Town Commissioners, and if that is not the case, or if something has gone wrong, then that needs to be addressed.
So it is possible that a majority of the commissioners were in favour of the submission, and some of the commissioners that, are speaking out, as is their right as a elected member, basically saying that they disagree with the submission that the commissioners have put in. Is that what's happening?
Well, that wouldn't seem to be the case according to the minutes. But of course, as you imagine, as a constituency MHK, I shouldn't really have to be trawling around the minutes of the commissioners to find out what is going on. So I also think that I hope that in reply to my letter, that they can clarify the situation and also for the purposes of the inquiry, clarify what their position is now. I think that the public need to, you know, understand what might be governance concerns, or how can that be the case? How can a submission, you know, go forward without a proper legitimate authority, if that is the case? You know, I just think there needs to be some clarity on all of this.
And of course, this matters. I mean, we're going to touch on the vaping products bill shortly, but were the commissioners putting in a submission about the vaping products bill and the clerk off his own bat? And I'm not saying this is what's happened, but you know, if the clerk put in a submission on behalf of the commissioners without getting the commissioners' say so, that wouldn't be that big a problem or big an issue. It's still perhaps not right, but it's it could be argued away as an administrative error. But with something as important as the area plan, in which significant wealth can be created by certain designations, it really is important that these things are right, isn't it?
It's definitely important that submissions reflect the elected representations in this matter. It is serious. The development planning process is set out in primary legislation, and there are certain steps that planning policy officers are following. That's why we've had, there's been a call for sites. I think that started in 2019. There has been, an initial consultation and preliminary publicity. There's then been a draft plan published. There has been further consultation. This is highly formalised. Absolutely, for the reasons you're indicating, should not be treated lightly, because this stuff, these documents that go to a public inquiry and then influences what the literal sort of shape and potential of the future of a town and, development and housing. And of course, there will always be vested interests in this. So, yeah, it's really significant and should actually be treated as such.
Well, the other bit of news that we have this week, of course, is the Vaping Products Act, as it can now reasonably be called, has received royal assent. Obviously, this is something that your area, the Cabinet Office, has been working very intensely on. Are you pleased that we've finally got this legislation in place?
I am pleased. I'm glad that, I think we sort of sent it off to the UK, the MOJ, quite a few months ago now. It's great that we've got it back. And I know that it was on the sort of DHSC program for a number of years prior to this administration. I was really keen to be able to fix something that was a gap over here, which was the fact that actually it hasn't been illegal to sell or supply vapes to children under 18 in teens. That will now be rectified from next Monday. But I think a really excellent part of the legislation brought forward is to do with introducing display and point of sale restrictions. So when you go into a shop now, tonight, you can see on display different vapes that they're like sweets, aren't they? They're like lollipop flavors and fruit flavors. And this is part of the issue. So from September, the display of those and advertising of those in retailers where those under 18 can go into, that will be banned. And so they'll be treated much more like cigarettes. So we really do hope that all of this can really stop making vaping products attractive to children, marketed in a way that is alluring to children and young people, and ultimately just protect them from the nicotine dependency and everything that goes along with that.
We're going to hear from Peel Town commissioners in a later programme, but this is the statement that they put on their website recently. A letter addressed to Peel Town commissioners dated 17th of May 2024 concerning the Cabinet Office's draft area plan for the North and West was received via email at 9:30 a.m. yesterday, 20th of May, from the Peel and Glenfaber member of the House of Keys, Minister for the Cabinet Office. Unusually, within 75 minutes, this letter had been released to the public and was being circulated on social media.
The content of the letter seeks both to deflect the blame onto the commissioners for the major amendments introduced by the Cabinet Office in the 2024 area plan and to distance the minister from her department's area plan inquiry documentation. Peel Town Commissioner's response on these matters will be sent directly to the Isle of Man government to rebut any allegations and to correct the misrepresentation, errors or inaccuracies stated within the minister's letter. In the meantime, Peel Town Commissioners confirm their 14-page submission sent by the Commissioner's Town Planning Consultant on the final day of the public consultation period, the 16th of September 2022, and the subsequent additional minor comments on 11th of October 2022 represent the Commissioner's views on the 24th of June 2022 Cabinet Office's public consultation documents. For the avoidance of doubt, the commissioners reiterate the 2022 draft area plan for the North and West does not accord with the requirements of the strategic plan 2016 to 2026, and paragraph 2.7 of the commissioners' submission on page 4 states, Cabinet Office have made it clear that the draft plan is subject to change and of course they may make modifications prior to the public inquiry and Peel Town Commissioners would very much welcome significant changes to current proposals with proposed designations removed and new ones added in locations that are sustainable and in accordance with the strategic plan, quantitatively and geographically. However, this is likely to be a much changed document to what the public have seen to date, and it is hoped that all those with an interest in the area are kept abreast of any potential changes. This warning was ignored, and in March 2024, a public inquiry publication introduced major amendments without prior warning or further public consultation. It fell to the commissioners to issue a press statement on the 29th of April 2024 to highlight the magnitude of these changes to the public and to formally request a full public consultation should be undertaken before the public inquiry is held. Unfortunately, this request for further public engagement was refused, and a one-week extension to the registration and submission of evidence for the inquiry was eventually granted following a further commissioner's request for a delay to these proceedings. Peel Town Commissioners are currently reviewing the 2024 public inquiry publication draft area plan for the North and West documentation for their submission to the public inquiry on or before the 28th of June 2024. The commissioners note the February 24 document detailing the schedule of responses, cites the consultation responses received in 2022 and proposed changes made by the Cabinet Office to the area plan. Following this consultation, this contemporary document does not support the reasons given recently by the Cabinet Office Minister in their letter for the residential zoning of 35.8 hectares of land around Peel. Peel Town Commissioners are disappointed by the failure of our Member of the House of Keys, Minister for the Cabinet Office, to meet the Commissioners and discuss these issues. It seems this little spat between the commissioners and their MHK may well rumble on. Jason Moorhouse had a starred question for the Chief Minister.
And it was quite an interesting example of how to obfuscate on the part of the answerer. I thought Chief Minister was asked the question about what support is going to be available in relation to the hospitality sector, and because a media release apparently is imminent, he wasn't prepared to give you the straight answers. Was that a fair reading of the situation?
That's true, but it was even worse than that, because I was actually asking what has been considered. So it wasn't a case of what will be offered tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock or whenever the announcement is made. It's what has been considered. And it wasn't until we'd been pushed in for half an hour that he went through the areas that have been requested to be considered by the hospitality industry, and he went through each one and said, we've looked at these, but that wasn't the question. The question was looking at what has been considered in terms of the four areas, the four priorities that were discussed with the industry last week, and in terms of those four areas, which of them will potentially be the news release that's coming out quite soon. But it wasn't until we really got to the point of we're in Tynwald, we've been democratically elected, we're asking the Chief Minister this key question about what will happen, and we can't be told until it comes out in the press release tomorrow. And it's like, whoa, what's happening here?
I mean, that is quite shocking, isn't it? Certainly in other parliaments, the convention appears to be you tell Parliament first and then you issue your media release. But this is the complete opposite, effectively. Tynwald doesn't seem to count.
It does seem a snub, especially from the fact that we'll probably be sitting tomorrow when the release comes out, so we're going to be actually focused on the debates and the issues that are involving us at that moment. So we may not actually see what the actual announcement is till lunchtime, which is going to be way after most of the people find out. You're thinking, well, wasn't this the first question on the order paper for Tynwald this week? And it's something we may not find out until everyone else has heard and everyone else has made a decision on whether it's a good suggestion or not. So it does feel like we've been treated in a really shabby way, which isn't good.
Have members had a briefing on what's going to be in this announcement? I mean, do you know already what's in it prior to the announcement being made?
All I've heard from is the industry itself and representatives there, and they've given me an indication of what has been spoken about. And it placed me in a difficult position this morning because I was wanting to say to the Chief Minister, well, is it the case you've looked at issues linked to salary? Is it a case you've actually looked at things linked to events? But it wasn't really my role to actually bring forward areas that could have been considered, that could have been on the table, when the question I brought was specifically, what have you considered? So it was a difficult position to be in this morning when I had an indication of what was being considered, what was being discussed. But in terms of a briefing for Tynwald members, I've not been invited to one. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether we get an invite tomorrow for 8 o'clock or something to let us see the information before it is released. But there are no guarantees that that will happen.
It does seem like a very strange way to go about running a government. If quite clearly government needs to be able to rely to a reasonable extent on support in Tynwald to get its business through. It's much more important to get the press release than it is to answer the question.
Yeah, it did seem frustrating. It also seemed to place the Chief Minister in a difficult position that he wasn't able to answer the question in terms of what was being discussed, what was being considered, when lots of people on the island are aware of that fact. And the Chief Minister, for some reason, wasn't prepared to share with us what was being considered and what options were possible on the table. You know, it wasn't a case of what will be offered to the industry later today or tomorrow. It was a case of what has been considered. And when we couldn't even get to that point, it felt like Tynwald was being kind of disrespected in some ways, that we weren't able to be given key information from the Chief Minister. I actually said, that's one of my questions was, is the Chief Minister actually aware of what is being offered? And it leaves you kind of asking that question. Has there been a briefing to the Council of Ministers? Is a case that, as the Chief Minister said, is being left to the Enterprise Minister and the Treasury Minister to come up with something? So tomorrow when the press release comes out, the Chief Minister could be as surprised as we are.
Well, it'll be interesting to see whether that is or isn't the case. The other issue that you were asking a question about, of course, was the airport, and the Minister for Infrastructure gave you a fairly fulsome answer about how much income has been raised as a result of the car parking charges at the airport. But there were other elements to the question he was a bit more coy over.
Yeah, it was quite interesting that revenue has gone up to just about £600,000, which is a significant sum. But one of the supplementary questions that I felt really needed to be answered was, how much are Ringo receiving for that work? Because if we're ending up with £600,000, presumably they're going to be taking quite a large chunk in terms of all their admin costs and dealing with the transaction and everything else. But that was kind of the excuse that it's commercially confidential and we can't share that, which seemed really quite frustrating when it's something that's being done for the people of the Isle of Man and we're paying this extra cost. And, you know, is it actually good value for money? How much extra people having to pay because of this company in the UK that are taking a slice of their spending, and we can't be told what the amount is, which again is concerning.
And it is surprising, because if it was a part of government that was doing this administrative function of looking after the car park, ensuring that fees are paid, car parking fees are paid, that would be completely searchable by any member of Tynwald. But because it's a private company, they seem to think they don't need to provide the information.
That city does look an interesting one, but it seems to be a response which is coming more and more frequently in terms of the post office, the MUA, that the chairman or the ministers are saying that is commercially confidential. And when you actually look at the contracts, when you actually look at what's happening, you're thinking, well, why is it confidential? Can't you provide some overview, just some insight in terms of what these costs are, what's actually happening with regard to this? Because as you suggest, if it was operated by the other man, then we would get information. So again, we've been locked out of the system, which is really quite frustrating.
I noted that when it came to the vote on the Department for Enterprises plan, you voted with the new political alliance. Any news there about a new member of the alliance?
Certainly not, and the Chief Minister did say under his breath, have you joined, or worse that fate? No, not at all. It was a difficult one. It was one of those cases where it's a case of, am I voting in favour in terms of it's a document that is forward-looking, but it's a document that's got issues with it, and I did go again that it wasn't a document I was really satisfied with, so I voted against it. But yeah, it wasn't a decision that was based on what colleagues had done and what colleagues had said. It was basically down to what I'd read and what I'd seen, and it was a tight decision this time. I voted against similar things in the past, for and against, but on this occasion I thought, no, it's not as good a document as it could be.
So what would you have liked to have seen change in that that department plan?
I think we're getting to the point where it's almost becoming regurgitated. We're getting a plan that has to be produced. It's another document that we have to read, we have to look at. It's taking a lot of officers' time. In terms of the key areas, there are really no measures of success beyond the most basic things. And we're getting lots and lots and lots of photographs and pictures, which, again, do satisfy some people, but it does distract in some way. So, yeah, it's really, when the Chief Minister kind of came with this idea that we were going to have these annual reports, it was seen as going to be really analytic, really detailed, something that we could really assess the department from the point of view of. And we've ended up with something which is quite bland and colourful, and really it's a tabletop booklet, coffee booklet, whatever it may be, rather than a piece of work that gives us that real clear insight into what the department's doing and how they want it to move forward.
I suspect there's a reason why these things were dropped. I still recall my when I was in a member for Rushen, my former colleague John Rimmington describing his department plan when he was the DAF minister as meaningless drivel, and that was him talking about his own department's plan. Is it possible, do you think, to write a plan in such a way that it actually can be debated and actually provide some meaningful political input?
I think it's possible, but I think we're a long way from that. And I think we've also got to actually look at it in terms of available resources. In terms of the available resources, however good that document is it worth those resources being allocated to that? Are there better things that could be done with that time, with that resource, with that officer? And it's concerning me that we're getting more and more of these documents that aren't really moving us forward. They're just kind of another tick box. And in terms of outcome and extra benefits for the people, I'm not seeing that.
And yet, government, everyone says they want to hold government accountable. They want to ensure that government is transparent. So in principle, the production of these documents is something that ticks the public's box in ensuring that government is explaining itself on a regular basis to the people.
It does provide an insight, but it's the level of detail, that's the issue, that we're becoming driven by the fact that there's got to be a document every 12 months rather than this is a core component that we need to be moving forward. And there's only limited resources, limited manpower, whatever it might be. And I'm concerned that we're actually focusing more on the delivery of a document than the delivery of a policy area.
Jason Moorhouse, MHK there, interviewed prior to the joint Treasury and Enterprise media release on support for the hospitality sector being published. Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas had a motion on the order paper, but it wasn't considered.
No, the Chief Minister stood up and said he didn't want it debated because it hadn't been on the order paper for 4 weeks. Then there was a vote. Legislative Council voted against it, with only one member of the MLC voting for it. So a bit shocking, really. I'm not surprised, I've got to be honest, because that seems to be the mood of the Legislative Council these days, and government seems to be working very closely with the Legislative Council. But we've got three, what I called, objective assessments, reviews and studies, which should be available to everybody. They should be available to the Policy Alliance, us lot, just as much as they should be available to government. They won't be available now until a time of the Chief Minister's choosing. Today we could have resolved in Tynwald that they should be published immediately. So it's a pretty serious indictment of our democracy today, what's just happened, because Legislative Council voted with ministers against allowing for the publication of a document.
And yet, the Chief Minister, whilst he hasn't notified the media, as far as I'm aware, the Chief Minister has told all Tynwald members that these documents will be published at the end of the parliamentary year. And the end of the parliamentary year is the end of July, isn't it?
Well, you'd think so, a plain reading of it, but he hasn't specified a date. And what we wanted was, we wanted it debated in July. So we had an amendment set up whereby we were going to call for it to, for the response to be published as alongside the report, so we could have a debate in July. As it is, the development viability study, which is about, which is the background to the island infrastructure scheme, which is the background to tens of millions being spent, which is the background to Manx Development Corporation. They have the information about development viability. Nobody else does. I do, actually. I saw it when I was on the Housing Communities Board, but it's not a public document. That's not right. It's not right that I've seen it and other people haven't.
The whole issue, though, is that the document is going to be published. I mean, you've effectively won your cause by putting these motions down.
Yeah, no, you're right. We've had some success. They will be published. But the point is that the development viability study should have been published 2 years ago. Council ministers have resisted of doing it because they've been making policy for Manx Development Corporation, for the expenditure from the Economic Strategy Fund, from the Island Infrastructure Scheme, behind closed doors, based on analysis that only they've seen. The objective assessment of housing need goes to the heart of the contested north and west area plan, because we've now got two different population projections and two different requirements for needs. One in the 2016 strategic plan, which was there when the north and west area plan was launched, a new one in the objective assessment of housing need that was published yesterday, and the third one is the funding review. And I thought Ms Edge's point was brilliant, which is the Chief Minister called for a funding review of education. That's been available for some time, it seems, for a couple of years nearly, but it still hasn't been published because government hasn't made up its mind what to do about it. You know, what if it says we'd all be better off closing a few of the smaller schools and having federal schools? What if it says that we're better off having schools in urban areas rather than in non-urban areas? What if it says all these sorts of things that matter for education policy? We still don't know. I haven't seen the funding review, and I want to see it.
One of the three motions was asking for the housing needs document to be to be published. That's already been published. The other two documents are going to be published within a few months. Isn't this just a storm in a teacup?
Yeah, they will be published if we take the Chief Minister at his word. But the point is, we wanted.
Are you suggesting that you can't take the Chief Minister at his word?
In December 2023, I was promised an FOI report in March as an amendment to my motion. It didn't arrive till May, and now it's not being debated unless my motion goes through in June. All sorts of times the Chief Minister and the Council Ministers miss deadlines. There's absolutely no reason why the Education Funding Review, the Development Viability Study, and the Objective Assessment of Housing Need couldn't have been published on block. We chose our motions together as a trilogy of motions to bring out standard documents that everybody should see for policy development, not just the chosen select few. We all need to see what's in those reports. I don't even think the people of the Isle of Man know what a development viability study is as yet, but we're spending tens of millions of pounds on Manx Development Corporation, the island infrastructure scheme, and we're making plans about for the strategic plan based on what's in it probably, and it hasn't been published. That's absolutely wrong. The development viability study should have been published when it was completed, whenever that was.
And yet, you weren't able to convince 7 of the 8 members of the Legislative Council. You only managed to convince 10 of the members of the Keys that this was worth breaching Tynwald's standing orders to discuss it.
That wasn't really a very serious debate. In a way, the principle was there, and I think members of the Legislative Council have let themselves down, and I think the Council Ministers have let themselves down by working with the Legislative Council in that sense. Look, these are objective assessments, reviews, and studies which are there to inform policy debate, whether it's from the Policy Alliance or anybody else in the House of Keys. That's the most important point, and it's shameful in a way that the Chief Minister felt able to say that, and then people voted with him.
You appear to have a new title for the Rebel Alliance. What is this the new title?
Well, we're not rebels as such. What we are is we want to have studies, funding reviews and objective assessments in public so different people can come up with different policy responses. I've been peppered with emails since we had the skills strategy debate today saying, you know, it's so far behind what's in Ireland, what's in Jersey. We really haven't got a skills strategy that's worth anything. All what we've got is the Chamber of Commerce and the people on the skills board are terribly excited that we've now got the beginning of a process to produce a strategy with milestones and outcomes described. And, you know, politics and policy making in the island is not exactly at its highest level. In my 10 years, I don't think we've been as low as we are now in terms of understanding of where we are in terms of policy. So I'm very pleased that I am working with a couple of others in a policy alliance, and that's as good a name as any other. We're not alternative, because our policies might be taken seriously. We're not rebel, we're not just against things, we're for things, and basically policy alliance is as good a title, and thank you very much for suggesting that in one of the articles you seem to write on Manx Radio.
A question, you had a question to the Treasury Minister in relation to the Liverpool ferry terminal. Mm. Were you content with the answers you were given?
Well, it was new information to me, and I was surprised that the information was given out so freely. So what we learned today was 800,000, perhaps approaching 1 million, I couldn't get all the figures down, is the rent that's currently paid by the steam packet for the use of the Liverpool landing stage. I think we also learned that that's on a month's notice. I think we can establish, though we didn't get to my question to the Infrastructure Minister, I think I'm pretty sure that the Isle of Man ferry terminal in Liverpool is ready for use by the steam packet. It's the steam packet that's choosing not to use it. For instance,
and why would they choose not to use a purpose-built facility?
Well, my suggestion has been that it's because they are still haggling over the price. And today I suggested it might also be to do with disputes over any silt that might be in the river that might need taking out, because I think the design is that the bow thrusters from the vessels will clear the silt away. I don't think everybody knows this, but in actual fact, there is an annual dredge of the existing landing stage, and that will need to carry on. But there's also the work of the thrusters, which if it's going regularly, will keep moving the silt. It's obviously better with the new terminal because we'll have vessels going there through the winter at weekends, which we don't have on the existing landing stage. So it sounds like there's haggling going on. I tried to push the Treasury Minister when he would intervene to stop the haggling between two public bodies, a state-owned company and a Department of Government, and he was imprecise about when he's going to stop it. So who knows? Apparently the Infrastructure Minister was going to tell us in answer to my question when the ferry terminal would be used, but we never got to that question because because members of the Legislative Council voted against extending question time.
But presumably you know now what the answer to that question is. Presumably you've spoken to the Infrastructure Minister, if you know that he was going to tell you.
I believe it's whenever the steam packets say that they're ready. So some of my supplementaries that people might have been interested to know would be along the lines of, we've got the Ben McCree, it doesn't seem to be used for the schedule during TT. Wouldn't it be great if the Ben McCree could go and do some berthing trials on the new ferry terminal, so that we don't have the excuse when it comes to the winter that the berthing trials are still going on? Basically, I don't think the Department of Infrastructure, council ministers beyond that, are being strong enough in all of this. Essentially, this is an arm's length company, but it doesn't mean it's not got to act in the national interest. It can't act in its own interests all the time. And we have a new ferry terminal. It should have been used for TT. I think it was available at the beginning of April. It certainly shouldn't be used just when it suits the steam packet. There's got to be the national interest has got to prevail in all of this. It's a bit like where we are with waste strategy. Things are breaking down north with the civic community site up there. I'm hearing rumours that down south there's a tension between two groups inside the group. I can see the situation whereby the Department of Infrastructure gets handed back the civic community sites in the north and the south. Now is the time. And it's always the case when there's squabbles about resources, when there's constraints in budgets, people are going to settle in their own interests. And now is the time for national politicians to work together in policy alliances to actually deal with things in the national interest, not in any sort of smaller particular interest.
Tanya August Hansen, MLC, was keen to refute the suggestion that MLCs were denying the will of the Keys.
Legislative Council, it is very, very easy to poke the finger at LegCo and say, oh yes, it was all Legislative Council's fault. But I would counter that in saying that it really wasn't to protect any particular minister. I mean, I've since found out that none of the ministers were whipped under collective responsibility for any of those three motions or the questions. But also that all three of those motions were thoroughly, in my opinion anyway, quite pointless.
And they were for the immediate release of three documents, one of which had been released the day before the Tynwald sitting.
Yeah. And the thing is that because I'm on the Poverty Committee in Parliament, I had these conversations with the Housing and Communities Board about the OHN being released at that particular time. So we knew it was going through the Council of Ministers and we knew that it would come out even when the motion appeared on the Register of Business. We were aware of what the timeline was for that document coming out. So it hadn't changed, it hadn't been quickened by the motion going down on the Register of Business or anything like that. But the other two were promised for publishing by the end of this parliamentary session, both of the documents that were being requested for the other two motions, and which means that they're due out before before the end of September anyway. And nobody could explain what the urgency was in getting those two documents out. And if they haven't gone through the Council of Ministers, if we don't like those two documents, who are we holding to account? On having decided that these documents should move forward and everybody should be progressing with these strategies.
The two documents that haven't been published, one is in relation to the work of the Manx Development Corporation, yeah, which considers which sites should or shouldn't be developed, I understand.
Looking forward to reading it, yeah.
The other one, of course, is in relation to expenditure on schools in the island. Both of these are involved, or involve the expenditure of significant sums of public money.
Yes.
Surely, if the reports are available, they should be published.
They should be, but once they go through the Council of Ministers, I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know if it's happened this week or if it's going to happen next week or the week after. But if they decide to move ahead with it, then I want to be able to hold them to account. I want to be able to challenge somebody on that. I can't challenge somebody on that if it's not been through the Council of Ministers, because they've not agreed to it and they've not agreed to it. So not to use, I hate using a double negative, but also on top of that, all three of these, we had 10 of members of the House of Keys that had voted for these. If we run the numbers, 10 does not a win make, regardless of what Legislative Council decided to vote for or against. And it wasn't unanimous from Legislative Council. It wasn't. I don't agree with him, but, you know, it wasn't unanimous. And also, run the numbers. Before you go out and post on social media about this, run the numbers. Would you have won the vote anyway? Answer is no. Or speak to the clerks. Clerks are available. They'll always tell you.
Because, of course, there were four members who weren't... weren't voting. I mean, there were some members who were present virtually but were voting, but effectively there were only 20 members of the Keys that were voting, so 10, which was the number of Keys that voted, wasn't a majority, so it would have fell in the House of Keys anyway.
So then
the other thing was the question time. There were only four questions left. There was little on the agenda for Tynwald. You got finished at 5:30, I think it was. So there was plenty of time to have these questions taken. Why did you vote against? And you know, I should say that you've told me on numerous occasions, LegCo doesn't meet in advance of Tynwald to decide collectively how to vote.
Well, we don't, simply because we've been accused of it so many times over the years. I mean, once you're accused of these things, you see it as reasonably dangerous. So therefore, you don't do it. We don't discuss voting and start deciding on how legislative council is collectively going to vote on anything. When we go into Tynwald is about each individual member of Legislative Council and how they feel about various different issues. It is not, and respective members, that is not about us as a collective group. We don't do that. I'm sure that people might have that perception. That's fine. It's not the reality of the situation. But mainly, some of these questions, they appear in the House of Keys. And we can hear all of that now because we have our sittings, if we have sittings at all, if we've got legislation going through, then we'll start at 2:30. So we can actually listen to the House of Keys as we're cracking on with work upstairs in Legislative Council in our common room. We listen to the House of Keys quite regularly. We'll listen to questions. We'll listen to the responses to supplementaries as well. And if we hear the following week questions that come back into Tynwald, and the same supplementaries are being asked, exactly the same responses are being given. And then you sit there and it's fine. You know, you listen to it and you listen to it and you listen to it. The same questions, the same answers, the same sort of... These are very important issues. But there is a function for questions, as you'll know, Phil, in that... questions come about as a result of a staged process of escalation. So you will go to the departments, you will speak to officers, you will speak to ministers, you will speak to probably political members with departmental responsibility for whatever that is about. And you will talk to them about, you know, get the other side of the argument, have a more rounded view, more information, educate yourself on whatever it is that, you know, is going on with that particular issue. If you're not getting answers out of the officers, you go to the minister. If you're not getting answers out of the minister or political members, then you'll probably put a question down. You'll listen to the question, you'll listen to the supplementaries, and off the back of that, then you might escalate it to a motion, or you might move it forward in Tynwald with various elements that haven't been answered, but it will change, like the questioning will change. And some of the time that's not happening. Some of the time some members aren't going to departments, they aren't speaking to officers, they are just going straight onto the floor. That escalation process isn't necessarily being followed, and that's fine. That's their prerogative. That's okay. Sometimes it is a little bit tiring, and sometimes you just kind of don't want to hear any more of it because it's just repetitive.
Do you think that despite only being 3 years, not even 3 years into this term, we're getting close to 3 years into, or three parliamentary years through this. House of Keys term in office. Do you think we've already entered into the sort of beauty parade that goes with an election?
I think in some cases it probably started off at the beginning of the administration with it. Not for the vast majority of people. And I wouldn't name individual members. I don't think that that's fair. But I do think that there is an element of that that started from the beginning. I do think that that is, to a degree, happening now with some individuals, not with everybody, but with some individuals. I don't think that that's all that they do. I think that they have other very, very amiable qualities in terms of the role that they hold. But I do think that that sort of, you know, sometimes it is a little bit, what's the word? Disheartening to see. Yeah, every now and again, when it crops up, it's not very nice.
So what do you think? Are MLCs government lackeys, or are they just injecting some common sense into Tynwald? Is government trying to keep vital information away from the public eye? Or is the new policy alliance just making political mischief? Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now though, I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geisachrom. Thanks for listening.